Welcome to another episode of the Leadership Playlist podcast. Today, we're speaking to Lisa Adkins. One of Lisa's many achievements is authoring the book Coaching Agile Teams, which was released in 2010 and is still a bestseller today. Dave and I first met Lisa about 3 years ago at a coaching workshop in Melbourne, Australia, and we've kept in touch ever since. Today, we are discussing the leadership skill of humble. Lisa, welcome. Can you please tell us the story of Lisa?
The story of Lisa is learning about change and learning how to change herself from a plan-driven project manager to an agile coach, from a good girl who did everything right to someone pursuing her own life and work and purpose with her own inner compass, and someone who is passionate about alleviating pain, and especially pain that people experience in organizations and in their work life, because that's where we're spending most of our time in this era.
Today's podcast topic is humble. What does humble mean to you?
Well, it's not so much what it means to me. We could talk about that, but I am really more interested in how the word humble has been twisted and confused in the way we use it in modern organizations. And especially I'm noticing a lot of leaders that I work with really struggling with the word humble in a couple different ways. Like one way is just this false humility, this false sense of being humble. And you know it when people say, oh, I'm so humbled by X. And usually X is, you know, they're being lauded for some achievement, or X number of followers are now following them or something like that. Now, that actually can be genuine. I mean, there are definitely things that bring people to humility in their lives, but it's often false. So that's one type of way that humility is going kind of wonky. And the other is just a confused humility. And I find this one really frequently with the leaders that I am working with solo and with their leadership teams, is this idea of like, well, you know, my job is to step back and create an environment for other people to perform. And so I just need to be humble. And what happens with that often, and the struggle that I'm finding with a lot of the leaders I'm working with, is that that crosses the line from humble into self-deprecation. And so they're actually not claiming their innate gifts, and they're really abdicating their role by not knowing how to be humble and confident.
That's pretty deep, actually, to think about it.
It's a big one to start with.
Yeah.
And it's so true.
It is very true.
Well, we could do something to explore it together if you want.
Yeah, let's go there. Let's try and unpack that a little bit.
Yeah. So one of the things I found most useful of the many things in the integral facilitation coursework I did with 10 Directions, that's a company name, about 3 or 4 years ago, were these two polarities and getting really clear about the four pieces of these two polarities. A polarity just meaning something that has opposite poles to it. And one polarity is self-deprecation to confidence. And the other polarity is arrogance to humility. And what I'm noticing in working with leaders and with agile transformations is that those four concepts tend to be collapsed. They tend to be sort of glommed onto each other in a way that's not very useful all the time, because as I said, humility crosses the borderline to self-deprecation. People cannot be genuinely confident because they're afraid of being too arrogant. You know, so it's useful to pull them apart. And I wanted to try that with you if you're up for it.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Okay, good. So what we'll do, and this is going to be fun, and I'm going to do it too. We're going to do it together. And everyone who's listening, you can do it too. You can do it in your own head, or if you're by yourself and you want to say it out loud, you can do it. So what we're going to do is just give voice to each of these four. And as we do it, pay attention to which feels most comfortable for you and to which of these four is a little bit of like, ooh, I'm not even that familiar with this place, or I don't like this place. Yeah. So we're just going to get some fluidity among these four things. Okay. So confidence, self-deprecation, arrogance, and humility. Where are we going first, folks?
I'm going to let Renee choose.
I don't know. Do we go the negative or the positive?
Okay. So now that's something to pay attention to, right? Because the more we think about these as negative and positive, the more we will tend to collapse them and stereotype them, right? So mm-hmm. there's something useful about all four of them, right? But not taken to an extreme. So how about we start with confidence? Yeah. So you might even like shift yourself in your seat a little bit and just allow yourself to come into the world of confidence as if you were stepping across a threshold and now you're in the world of confidence. And so if you are speaking from confidence, I'm going to go first to give you a model, but I just want to invite you to say whatever you would normally say. So speaking from the world of confidence, I have skills and abilities that I am really proud of. We're just going to keep it rolling. We want to like paint a picture of confidence and that what happens. See, now just notice already if this is a little bit dicey for you. Some people have a hard time speaking from this voice. Maybe you, maybe not. Let's see. So genuine confidence. Go ahead and say, start a sentence that starts with I.
I would say my confidence in my ability to make connections with people.
Yeah, great. So I have the great ability to make connections with people. Yeah. Okay. What else? Renee, we're just going to go around and around. Just keep it going like three times.
I have confidence in my ability to connect people to the why.
Great. I am confident in my voice and in my use of my voice.
I'm confident in my ability to get things done.
I was going to say something similar. I was going to say, I'm confident in my ability to organize things or people to achieve a purpose.
There you go. So you get the sense of confidence, right? That it's a direct statement. It has some fact to it. You know, it's just sort of like right out there. It's very quite plain, actually. Mm. You know, no big deal, right? And yet it was sort of hard for us to get started, right? Because like, who am I to be confident? Well, what was happening for you all when we first started? Let's just check in with that.
I'm super uncomfortable.
I
am not good at calling. I can't identify what I'm good at. And from a confidence point of view, I don't know if that's a confidence thing or if it's a I don't know what it is.
Well, just hold that thought because we've got three more to visit and you might get some clues in the other three.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. What about for you, Dave? What was it like when we first started?
Yeah, look, it was, I think we're so used to doing this and we've done a couple where it's planned, right? I know you've just taken this a little bit on a different path. And it's you kind of have a little bit of confidence when you have a little structure around, you kind of, yes, I know where I go. But then when you deviate from it, it's like, whoa. This is slippery ice or, you know, rocky terrain. I'm not used to being here now. Yeah. Well, am I really confident or am I faking it? Right.
Yeah. No, you don't even know. Yeah. Don't even know. Fair enough. And as we got going, it started to move a little faster. It started to move with a little less, maybe tinge of self-deprecation. We'll see when we get there. So, in that voice of confidence, what you all were talking about getting started there, there might have been just a little tinge of self-deprecation. Like, oh, who am I to? That's the voice of self-deprecation. So let's just go there. Let's just go to self-deprecation. And to do that, everyone listening and Renee and Dave right now, to do that, just shift your body a little bit. Imagine that you're walking into a new room and this is the room of self-deprecation. So self-deprecation is like putting yourself down. That's what it means, yeah? So I'll start us and we can just go in any order or even random order. You know, I am really no good at handling too many stressful things at once.
Yeah, I'd have to say for me, it would be it is that kind of lack of confidence, imposter syndrome. I always feel that I'm completely in the wrong place and I don't fit in. So yeah. I'm like, you know, and I look, she has to be the expert and I'm going, no, this is not me. I prefer to be in the shadows, the back.
Yeah.
These come very easily for me. Who am I to walk into this room and be the expert?
Who am I to think I can write a book and actually, you know, say something that's relevant?
Yeah, I think, again, it comes back to this thing. Who am I to be a coach to anyone? Or, you know, that kind of the listening for a person without judgment, I think is the hardest thing for me.
Yeah, I'm just a wreck.
Who am I to be a coach to these executives who have worked damn hard to get where they are today?
Mm-hmm. You can already feel sort of that the air is thick.
Mm.
You know, compared to a moment ago when we were talking from the place of confidence. And if you go like one more level down, it does go to the I am statements. I'm a loser. I'm not meant to be here, and on and on. Yeah. So this is a place that all of us know, and some of us know this place more with more familiarity than others. Okay, we are going to move to another place. We're going to move from self-deprecation over to humility. So we're going to get to step into another room. And so you might just shake that one off a little bit because we're going to like have a new setting, you know, and imagine walking over a threshold into a new room. This one's furnished completely differently than the last one. And this is the place of humility. Wow, there is so much I'm not in control of, and I'm just going to try my best.
I never feel I'm too big to do the small things that need to be done.
I'm not sure what's the right way either. I'm just happy to go along for the ride and find it out.
Of all of the chance encounters and just the infinitesimal probability that I would be where I am doing what I am, I'm just amazed.
I feel that I'm part of something bigger than me.
Yeah, I feel I'm just a small part of this puzzle.
So if you were to give the atmosphere or the tone some words, what would you say is the tone or the atmosphere that this one creates or has created right here, right now?
Calm came to mind for me.
Calm.
Felt calmer.
Very reflective.
It's reverent, especially the last few things you said. The two of you really brought in a reverence, like a specialness. Yeah, so they're all really different, right? I hope that you, whoever you are listening right now, you can also feel the difference with us. So, okay. We have a last room to visit, and it's the room of arrogance. Are you ready to go?
Yes.
This one.
Okay. Open that door to the room of arrogance and step in. Yeah. This room is definitely furnished differently than the rest. This one has floor-to-ceiling corner windows. All right. So speaking from the voice of arrogance, you know, they really should listen to what I say because I've figured this out, and people just need to honor my expertise.
Yeah, pretty much. You pay me to come in as the expert. Well, wouldn't you not listen to me?
That's right.
I do have the experience. You just need to listen.
Yeah. Yeah, I am right.
And you are wrong.
Right. So arrogance does set up this tit for tat between people who are embodying arrogance, for sure. It sets up a fight every single time. Yeah. And it's also a little bit more tricky. So let's try this flavor of arrogance. There's more of like an enlightened flavor of arrogance. And it sort of sounds like my way is really the best path. I have found the path.
I'd say it would be my experience and learnings have brought me to that decision.
Mm-hmm.
My way is the right way based on my experience.
Now, we're embodying sort of a very nice kind of arrogance, but there's also a very brutish arrogance. It's the braggart. That's the one we think of most, like when someone's being really egotistical or bragging or something like that. I mean, so that sounds like I have 10,000 Twitter followers and I get more every day. I don't even try to do anything to make that happen. So just stretch a little bit and see if you can just try it. Just try one, you know, because this is an edge for a lot of people. And yet if we can't embody arrogance, we can't let it go. So just to try it on, try that sort of that brute form of arrogance, that look at me, I'm the best, I know best. Try it, Dave.
I'm trying to give Renee space to jump in just to see if she will.
Bullshit. Chicken. I've got one.
Go, Renee.
Put the pressure on me then, Renee.
I've never said this out loud. I spoke at a global Scrum conference.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, then I'm going to have to go with something like that. Yeah. So I am the first CTC in South Australia, Scrum Alliance.
Yeah. So how was this for you all, stepping into these four different rooms of these things that tend to get mixed up with humility?
Can we name the feeling in the room for that arrogance?
Oh, let's do that. Let's do that. Yeah. So what is it like? What is this one like?
I felt sick.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just, this one was hard. This one's hard for me. I mean, I actually can do arrogance pretty well. I'm fairly arrogant. I have to watch it. But it just doesn't feel good.
No, heart's racing, just feel gross.
Mm. Yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it? It's like, I think a little bit like you, I've tried to work on this arrogance and sometimes I come across too arrogant. I don't know what I'm doing. I need to work on it. I do a lot better, but it's like, it's hard sometimes. You have to know that trigger that you're stepping over that threshold instead of being arrogant. But then sometimes people expect that of you, right? As I said, they pay for a consultant to come in, they expect you to have the answers. And when you try and take a different stance, they're expecting you to be arrogant. They're actually disappointed that you're not arrogant. Mm.
Yeah. And I would be curious about whether or not what they want is arrogance or confidence. And they might indeed want arrogance, because we sort of love the bloodbath of arrogance, honestly, because there was energy there. You can't deny it. There is energy in arrogance.
Yeah.
You know, and not as much energy in confidence, even though that it's a more evolved or a more healthy, I suppose, way of embodying one's knowledge and capabilities.
There's a thin line, right? There's a thin line between being too overconfident and stepping into that arrogance. And then
absolutely.
Not even yourself. It's how people see you. Because some people, look at this guy. He's so confident. He's arrogant because he thinks he knows everything. Where you don't feel that way. You just feel that you're just being the subject matter expert or, you know, teaching or whatever you're trying to do. But the person on the other side is going, this person is so arrogant.
You're right. We can't see our own arrogance. Other people see it. And it is incredibly subjective. No doubt about it. Right. Mm. And so that's why one of the tools I use with leaders is called the Leadership Circle Profile, because it actually measures about 25 different aspects. But one of them is actual arrogance. It measures how arrogant the leader comes across to other people. And it's usually a shocker to them. On both sides of the extreme, sometimes they come across incredibly arrogant, and they're like you did. They're like, I don't get it. All I'm doing is like telling them what I know. I don't understand the disconnect. But the disconnect is that when we're arrogant, we've already set up the idea that we, like what we said, we know best, follow our way. You know, it doesn't create space for the other person. And there's a certain sort of like a lack of humanity when we're coming across as arrogant, you know, like we're not in the mess of the mundane, we're somehow above reproach. So that's when it gets set up in a way that other people don't want to follow someone who is embodying that like pure arrogance. I also, on the other side, you know, oftentimes when people get their results back with this tool that I use, they think they're being incredibly arrogant and other people are like, no, not at all. I mean, we need to hear from you more. And that's when their sort of confused humility may have crossed over into self-deprecation. And they're actually putting themselves down in their own mind. But what they don't know is that they can develop genuine confidence, right? Humility and confidence. I vow to be humble yet confident, not putting myself or others down. I just heard that this last week. That's one of the 10 grave precepts in Zen Buddhism. Who knew?
Wow.
Right? So it just goes right along with what we're up to.
So I think me and Renee have both done the leadership circles, 360, and for me, I had a similar experience of what you just described.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought this of myself. Everyone else, I was nowhere near.
Yeah. That's why it's important to get that outside view.
And it was 180 for me based on leaders and peers. Yeah. So leaders actually saw me more arrogant than my peers did, which was, and my kind of attitude to leadership was a little bit, in question. Yeah.
Well, and as you said, Dave, like when you get triggered, that's when you move into more of that arrogance, like that, I know the right way, I'm above reproach, you know, don't challenge me. And the same thing for me, my friend, when I start to feel less than, my strategy is to puff myself up. You know, if I'm not paying attention to my own internal experience, and if I don't have good emotional regulation, you know, that's what'll happen. But if I do have good emotional regulation, I'll be like, you know, basically there's no threat to me here. I know it might feel threatening, but there's no threat. I don't need to puff myself up. I mean, I actually do know what I'm talking about. But let me just say that and keep the line of communication open in a way that's, you know, human, and then people will follow you.
So what are some of the, you said with the leadership circle, the leaders that you're getting results back for, and, you know, their level of arrogance and stuff from the feedback, what are some of the techniques that you use with them to help with that?
Well, the reason I said yes to talking about humility with you all is because this topic is so up right now with leaders. And mostly on the side of them falling into self-deprecation and not realizing it. And so one of the big techniques is just doing what we just did, like embodying the four aspects, the two different polarities, self-deprecation to confidence and arrogance to humility, right? I don't tend to get the arrogant assholes, like, you know, everyone has sort of a stereotype of a top leader in an organization. Not saying that they're not there, they are. My gosh, we certainly have them in public life right now. But the vast majority of them are genuinely wanting to be 21st century leaders. And it dawned on me today, we're in the 21st year of the 21st century right now. And so we're just barely into this century, you know, and we're learning how to navigate it. And so these leaders are wanting to be facilitative. They're wanting to get the best from people and have people feel fulfilled and create amazing products and all of that. And so as they're navigating this world where they're moving from heroic leadership to a post-heroic leadership kind of mindset, they fall into self-deprecation. And so I think that's really fascinating. So really just embodying these four with those leaders that we just did, and that, you know, you probably did when you were listening to us, you know, has been an eye-opener for them, a real eye-opener. And then just, you know, the thing that I encourage them to do is to design alliances with people and to get allies. You know, like they will probably say to someone on their leadership team, you know, hey, I've just had this realization about, you know, like I might be abdicating my actual place of confidence sometimes, and moving into sort of this, oh, you know, who am I to kind of thinking. And so if you see me kind of falling back, ask me what's going on in my head, help me learn. Because these are like scripts we run in our heads, and we're not even really aware of them most of the time. So that's another pro tip, is to basically get an ally who will tell you and who will ask.
Do you think it's more of a problem these days because of COVID, and there's more people fighting for their jobs or their position or whatever?
Well, that's a really interesting question. I haven't thought about that before, but as I'm sort of sinking into it, I think one of the things that is front and center in my mind related to COVID is that this is the first time so many of us are facing a deeply troubling uncertainty. You know, like we can't even plan a family vacation months out. And that used to be so normal. The world was so steady, at least it appeared steady to us. Now there's a huge swath of humanity that it never appeared steady to, right? So that has, uncertainty has always been there. But there has been this progress and this maybe even a little bit of a false sense of certainty we got lulled into. I know I did. And so I think that when that is sort of the ground that's shifting all the time, then any of these things can downshift for us. You know, any of these sort of more advanced ways that we were operating in the world can just downshift because it's just a little bit too much to handle.
I wonder if it's some of it is also because we're mostly virtual. And even though you're having conversations online and you can see people's faces most of the time and whatever, but you're basically stuck with your own company and the company of those who are in your house 24/7. And it's been, 18 months it's been like that. So I wonder if, I don't know, there's challenges where you can't assert yourself in the house so that you're a little bit more brave because it's just you, you're not around physical presence of people. I wonder if it's a little bit of that as well.
I don't know. We're just in a deeply messed up time.
Mm.
I mean, and I think that the more we can give ourselves a little bit of room to just be kinder to ourselves because of the time we're in, the better we're going to be. The better we're going to be. Like this, I was working with one leader and she had a baby during the height of the initial crisis of the pandemic. She was coming back into work. They were, of course, they're down a bunch of staff. People have left. Some people died. That was a big thing they were still processing. They asked her to take more work on because they don't have enough staff. And she's like, and I just don't know why I can't perform like I used to. And I'm like, hello, can you enumerate the life-shattering things that have happened to you in the last 6 months, just 6 months? And so I think that this sort of performance anxiety we have is from an old paradigm. It's an echo of an old world.
I think a lot of people are kind of like, we're a little bit better in South Australia. We have a bit more freedom, but I think a lot of people are just on survival mode at the moment. I just got to get through this day, this week. It's, there's always that wishing that we're going to get freedom. Things are going to open back again and we'll get back to normality. But I feel like maybe we're not. Right? There's always going to be something. I think this could be a rude shock for everyone that is set back to that kind of arrogance or that, that we just thought this is it. We're perfect. Nothing can derail us. Everything's going fine, and now it's bang. But it's been a lot of those over the last, I'd say, 10, 15 years. These things become more frequent, right? Like the recession that happened, that the home loan crisis thing hit, and all this has been one thing after another. And it's, I worry, over here, and I know Renee's the same, that, the minute there's a couple of cases, then the whole place goes into this kind of fight or flight mode. And everyone's just on edge waiting for a lockdown, knowing that. They have no idea how long the lockdown is going to be. They have no idea of what's going to be, what the restrictions are going to be. And, and things like Christmas could be at risk of no holidays. So, yeah, I think it's really troubling for the mental state of people now that I think at the moment it's just survival mode. It's just.
Yeah. And your brush fires haven't even started, right?
No, so that'll be. Yeah.
Just wait for that. Right. And so I think that the era we're heading into is an era of that kind of constant turbulence. Because if we think about the climate disasters that we are seeing in pretty much every nation simultaneously right now, if we think about the mass migrations that will start to kick up, which we've already been seeing here in my part of the world, with so many people leaving South and Central America and moving up into North America to escape essentially climate disaster. It's just going to become, this is what's on the menu. Disturbance and turbulence is what's on the menu. And so I've really been thinking about how I can in particular, skill myself up and broaden my range as a leader to be able to hold what I think is going to become a necessity to help people process these really highly charged emotional states. because it's going to keep coming.
And the frequency is going to get smaller and smaller. And these things used to be big, big 20, 30 years before you'd have something like polio back in the 50s. It was, I think, around was 500,000 cases a year or something. And then now it's global pandemic.
Well, and like, as you know, in my own nation, in the United States, I just need to stop and take a moment to acknowledge and honor that we have lost 700,000 people to COVID. We just crossed that threshold this week. That is just an absolutely horrifying number to me. I just think that the more we recognize that we're in this sort of time and the more we learn how to let this stuff flow through and somehow still have a generative response, a creativity on the other side of working with the emotional state, the better we're going to be. I think past generations have shown us really clearly that ignoring it doesn't work. It will come back around.
Yeah, it's amazing that number. Like, it's more people that have died. It's more deaths than in the Vietnam War. And like, when you put it into that kind of context, wow. And by that, and Vietnam War spread over a couple of years. So this is like 18 months we've had this.
So if we think about, just going back to what you said before, Lisa, around the pressure that everyone's been under, how do we give ourselves a break? To try and tie it back to humility, is it being humble with yourself and doing the exercise that we did before from a humility stance? Is that something that you think would help people generally?
Well, if we think about it, like if we think about the different sort of atmospheres that got created as we visited confidence, which was a little bit bouncy and a little bit charged, and then self-deprecation was really stuck and thick. And then arrogance had energy, but it was icky. And then humility had this calm sense of being part of something larger. Yeah, it was calmer, right? It was more thoughtful, right? So I think there is something about hanging out in humility. And for me, the place I go to connect to my agency in the world, but also the fact that I'm a tiny little speck on a backwater planet in an unremarkable galaxy, you know, is nature. And I'm lucky that I have trees in my backyard. And so all those trees know me and I know them. You know, I walk among those trees. Maybe that's something that people can do to give themselves a break. I sort of, I guess maybe what you said, Renee, you know, like I'm a puzzle piece, right? Something that would have people feel like they're a puzzle piece. They're significant, but they're not the only, right? That there is something bigger going on. Hmm. What might it be for each of you, like, to help you move into that humble place where you can give yourself a break and or just feel a relaxation in your nervous system?
Everyone knows my answer, Pilates.
So what about Pilates does that for you?
It just taps into a different part of my brain. So I can be creative for my clients, putting a session together or whatever. I can be creative. So it's, you know, because they're coming to me for that opportunity to have a break, give themselves a break as well. So that's my responsibility to make sure that that time they're giving themselves is worthwhile. But then for me personally, when it's just me in my studio on my own, just going with the flow, listening to whatever music I feel like listening to and just letting my body do whatever it feels like doing. It's just a different world.
Yeah, it transports you to a different world. That's what happens to me in nature.
Mm. It is when you look at the awesomeness of it. Like, I live not far from the beach and you just go down and sit by the beach and look at the waves and you just see the vastness of it, right? You just go, wow. There's no end to that, right? I'm a small speck, as you said, small speck in a backwater planet. When you think about that, then you become. But then as the other thing is you mentioned, we are, although we're a puzzle piece, we're part of it. Like, without that, you don't see the bigger picture, right? You can't feel anything. Right. It's like, and you're connected to all the other pieces in some sort of way. So
yeah, it's sort of interesting to be radically insignificant and wildly significant all at the same time.
Lisa, you mentioned that you go escape into nature to help recenter yourself. How about music? Are there songs that you listen to or a style of music that you listen to reground yourself or to help you know, remind you to be more humble and less arrogant?
Yes. There's a particular song, and I started playing it years ago when I was recording Coaching Agile Teams live lessons, those video lessons. And I played it during when we had every pause. And pretty soon the entire building knew this song, and we would all sing it. It's a song by someone that, you know, she's not very famous. Her name is Amy Carroll Webb, and she's a folk singer here in the U.S., and it's called Take Me Down. I thought I might sing a little bit for you. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah. Have you ever sung?
Because, I mean, it's not a song that you know. Take me down, Grandmama God. Take me down, Grandmama God. Take me down, take me down. Down under the earth where seeds are sown, under the truth I think I know, under my need to be correct, under my failure to connect, under my rise to my own defense, under my demand that it all makes sense, under my ego, under my pride, under my desire to be satisfied. Oh, take me down, Grandmama God. Take me down, Grandmama God. Take me down, take me down, down.
Very nice. Love those lyrics.
Oh, there's two more verses that are even better.
Wow.
It's an awesome song. Yeah, so
amazing.
I think it is on Spotify and Apple Music and all that, so people can find it.
And I think we're going to have to make people sing now.
Dave, you're up. You've got to sing your song.
No way. No way. Do you want people to listen to this?
What song do you listen to ground your humility, Dave?
I've got two, I would say. One is... And you know this one, Brothers in Arms of Dire Straits, and they do that in concert. It's just, you know, you're more connected to other people. It's not all about you. And they talk about like the feels and all that going back. It's just that whole connection to nature and being a part of a team, and you know. And the other one is Master Plan by Oasis. This is basically, again, there's a whole thing going on and you're just a cog in it. So, you know, you just don't worry about it. Just be the best you, and everything else will kind of take care of itself. There's a plan out there. And you might not see it, but there's something there. So over to you, Renee.
Mine isn't a song. Mine is a practice. So the last couple of months, I've been learning the guitar. And so I've got my little setup in my room now, in my office. I've got a guitar and a bass guitar as well. I find myself nowadays picking up the guitar at least once every couple of hours and just playing some songs that I've learnt. And I have found that really does ground me, really does, especially when I'm working and find myself getting worked up about something, or, you know, I could very easily cross into that arrogance arena. I pick up my guitar and that seems to calm me down a little bit. So yeah, not a particular song, but I do play the same songs because I don't know very many of them, but that's me.
I love it. So, well, unless we focus on humility too much, I mean, what I think this time is calling for is what we said before, humility and confidence without putting myself or others down.
I like that. We always finish off our podcasts with fast five questions. They're never fast, but just pretend they're fast and snappy.
They're faster than your questions.
What book are you reading at the moment, Lisa?
I am reading the Three Body Problem series. C-I-X-I-N. Lynn is the guy's name. I don't want to even try to pronounce it incorrectly. It's super deep. Okay, spoiler alert. If you want to read this book and you don't want to know what happens, like hit that little button to fast forward, you know, a couple times. So here's the thing. This is a really important thing. I think it's really cool. The whole premise of this book is that there is another intelligent life form in the universe. And somehow we know that they're going to be here in 400 years. We know it. We know it ahead of time. They've told us. They're on their way. And it's what we do as human beings. And basically, I can't stand the book right now because all we're doing on the planet is tearing each other up. It doesn't actually cause us to come together like I was hoping the threat of like an interstellar intelligent species would. It's kind of tough to get through right now, but it's fascinating.
What's your favorite smell?
It just happened this morning. The smell of fire in the air with fall, like fall leaves and the crispness of the air, and someone has a fire going in a chimney. Yeah, that smell.
As a kid, Lisa, what was your favorite toy?
Hula hoop was my favorite, and I was so good at it. My brother and I were both really good at it. We could start it on our hands above our heads and then have it go down our head and around our neck, and we'd do it around our neck, and then we'd let it shimmy down our shoulders and catch it on our hips and do it on our hips, and then we go all the way down to our feet and then get it on one foot and then skip around it.
Wow.
That's how good we were.
That's impressive.
Both of us.
Wow.
Too bad we were not like, you know, rabid photo takers and video takers at that time, because we probably would have won like that $10 million family video thing.
We made a fortune on TikTok.
Yes, a fortune on TikTok. Too bad. Yeah.
What TV show are you currently binging?
Well, I have one that I'm really embarrassed about and one that I'm not. So I'll tell you about the one I'm embarrassed about. I am binge watching something called Million Dollar Listing New York, about these people who sell these multi-million dollar penthouses and apartments in New York City. And I'm just like fascinated by their lifestyle and like who they are and how they do these big real estate deals. And I love looking at high-end finishes and beautiful decorating. And so that's my big escape. And I sort of am sucked into the stories of these brokers' lives. I binged an Australian show recently called The Single Wives.
I watched that after you told me about it.
Yeah. And I was totally fascinated. I mean, this was like, I can't remember, four or five women who'd come out of marriages or their husbands had died or something like that, coming back into the dating scene. And boy, you want to talk about working with self-deprecation. These women were like decimated. I mean, really like had no sense of confidence about themselves at all, or were super arrogant, which just meant that they were protecting their hearts, you know? Mm. So it was fascinating. It was a great bit of coaching.
Final question. The end of the world is coming. The final thing you
yes,
do.
Yes, it is.
In 400 years.
The aliens are coming in 400 years.
what's the last thing you do?
Well, if I have any of my family members near me, the last thing I do is just sit down with them and hold hands. And if I don't have any family members near me, I suppose I would just get on my knees and let my face turn up to the sun and just feel the beauty of this place for as long as I could.
Thank you for your time, Lisa. It's been a very interesting hour, not something that we were prepared for, or the direction that we thought you threw us into, a very uncertain place, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. And as I said earlier, it was very timely for me as well. So thank you very much.
Yes, thank you, Lisa.